You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
16 years ago, you gave me the profound honor to lead our party to victory and to lead our nation to a new era of peace and broadly shared prosperity. Together, we prevailed in a hard campaign in which the Republicans said I was too young and too inexperienced to be commander-in-chief.
It sounded familiar last night in Denver, and they were hoping that it turns out in November exactly what happened in 1992 when Clinton made it to the White House. Bill Clinton spoke before the convention last night and put to rest the case of Clinton v. Obama. They lined up their ducks and projected party unity. And then Joe Biden gave a speech last night in Denver focusing on John McCain. They're all ready for the speech tonight. Barack Obama will be in the Mile High Stadium. 75,000 people will be attending it. And if the stakes weren't high enough, it's 45 years to the day that Martin Luther King Jr. gave his I Have a Dream speech.
An historic nomination, the first African-American to be the nominee of a major political party in the United States. The first time the acceptance speech has been made in a stadium in front of 75,000 people. And as you just said, John, it's all happening 45 years ago to the day when Martin Luther King gave his I Have a Dream speech. And Takeaway contributor and Essence Magazine senior editor Patrick Henry Bass is coming to us from Denver, where he's been covering the convention. He's also the author of the book Like a Mighty Stream, The March on Washington, August 28, 1963. And Patrick, what do you make of this, do we say coincidence?
It's a divine coincidence if it is. I mean, it's an amazing coincidence. I mean, just think that 45 years ago when Dr. King and nine other civil rights leaders convened on the Lincoln, right in front of the Lincoln Memorial, that we still had legal segregation in this country. And the reason that the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom took place on Labor Day in 1963 was to get passage of a civil rights bill that would end legal segregation, which meant that schools for the blind were segregated, that, you know, African Americans could not go to some department stores and try and close. I mean, some of the laws then were just reprehensible. And to think 45 years later that we have an African American who is the presidential guy, you know, he's our Democratic leader. It's phenomenal.
And there are some differences. I mean, certainly back then there were not great expectations for MLK's March on Washington. And today there are great expectations given just the sheer number of people who are going to be showing up.
Exactly. One of the things that I think people are missing in any discussion of the March on Washington is how many African-American leaders we had in 1963. There was Whitney Young. There was John Lewis. There was A. Philip Randolph. I mean, it wasn't just one guy. And so when the March on Washington happened, it had only been planned for 8 weeks. It wasn't anything that had been planned for a lifetime or, you know, for, you know, 2 years. I mean, it all came together rather quickly because of the brilliance of A. Philip Randolph and Bayard Rustin. So when Dr. King talked about the, when there was a mention of the I Have a Dream speech, he had previewed a little bit of it in Chicago, but nothing like what we saw or what we now see, you know, in the videotapes and the reels from that day.
This date, though, of the Democratic nominee giving their acceptance speech was set more than a year ago, from what I understand. And back then, clearly no one knew who the nominee was going to be, or many thought that the nominee would be Senator Clinton. So it's really not, this has not been manipulated in some way. It just kind of turns out that Barack Obama got the nomination and he's speaking on this day.
Yeah, that's why I was saying that there's something about it that sort of seems divine. But I think that there's a huge, it's a tall order for Barack Obama. I mean, because the I Have a Dream speech is now one of, it's actually the most famous speech of the 20th century. Can we listen to a little bit of that? Here's Dr. King right now.
I am happy to join with you today in what will go down in history as the greatest demonstration for freedom in the history of our nation.
Boy, stylistically, they couldn't be more different, these two, Patrick. I mean, the cadences of Dr. King are almost musical. And, you know, we got a professor up there tonight.
Exactly. And, you know, one of the things, John, that also gets missing is, you know, some of the amazing speeches that were delivered that day. I mean, the day of the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom in 1963, you had Mahalia Jackson singing. You had Marian Anderson, who had been banned from singing in front of the Lincoln Memorial by the Daughters of the American Revolution. She came back to sing. You know, Walter Reuther, who was a huge leader of the United Auto Workers, white guy, gave one of the most rousing speeches of the day. And had Dr. King not delivered I Have a Dream, people would still be talking about Walter Reuther's speech. John Lewis, you know, there was the Archbishop of the Archbishop of the day wanted to edit John Lewis's speech because he wanted to talk about, you know, the fieriness of a troop marching through Birmingham, and they thought that that was too incendiary. I mean, it was an amazing day of rhetoric, and I think that when we listen to Barack Obama, because we're missing orators like Dr. King, we think we're getting some of the best oratory of our day, but it really pales in comparison to Dr. King and some of those other speakers. I mean, Roy Wilkins from the NAACP was an amazing leader and a phenomenal speaker.
You speak about John Lewis, and as John mentioned earlier, Hockenberry, he is the bridge. He was there for the I Have a Dream speech, and he'll be there tonight for Barack Obama's acceptance speech.
And he was an early supporter of Hillary Clinton, which is very ironic. You know, it was only after Bill Clinton, you know, turned it out, as we will say, in South Carolina, you know, and started summoning Jesse Jackson, and some people would think race baiting, that John Lewis had a change of mind about Hillary Clinton and reluctantly went to Barack Obama, I would say.
How do you think that Joe Biden set the stage for what we'll hear from Barack Obama tonight?
Well, last night, you know, it's very interesting that the Democratic Party has shifted so much. I mean, the Clinton era, you know, I think it was sort of a swan song for them, you know, over the past 2 days. And Joe Biden reminded us about the old Democratic Party, the Democratic Party of the working class, of the blue-collar guy, just looking at his mom up in the audience, looking at his wife who looks like no political wife. I mean, just the juxtaposition between the polish of Michelle Obama and, you know, Joe Biden's wife, you know.
That's interesting.
Stark contrast.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I'm interested in what you think, Patrick. I mean, we sort of dipped you right up to your eyeballs in lobbying and kind of the cynical sort of backstory of the convention. And here is this really important speech on this really historic day. How are you feeling just sort of emotionally about the significance of what Barack Obama is going to have to do tonight?
Well, just as an American, this is an amazing historic moment. Now, I think the plan is for me to go to some sports bar to hang out with regular folks, you know, instead of being at the stadium, or I may spend some time with the family just to sort of get their reaction. So as an American, I feel, you know, extremely moved by this moment. But as an African American, I have to say that this is probably one of the most significant experiences of my life. I never would have thought that this could have happened. And I'm not a cynic, you know, at heart. I'm a cockeyed optimist, but I just never thought that a guy named Barack Hussein Obama would be the Democratic, you know, nominee, you know, for the Democratic Party.
And as a student of American history and of African American history, what do you think this means for the African American community?
Adora, we shall see, right? I mean, because there are a lot of people who are calling this a Huxtable moment, as if they're still comparing Barack and Michelle to sitcom characters, you know? So we shall see. What I'm thinking is that this has inspired all Americans. That's the great hope. And then Dr. King's I Have a Dream speech will have been fulfilled. We'll see in November.
Well, the bar is high for me because I don't buy any of this spontaneity of the convention, but I absolutely agree with you that the stakes couldn't be higher for Barack Obama. And this University of Chicago, and I attended the University of Chicago, professor is definitely going to have to step up. You have to convince me tomorrow, though.
I'll tell him that when I see him earlier today, that he must do that. That John Hockenberry said, look, brother, you got big shoes to fill.
Yeah. Please record that conversation if you actually have it, all right?
As always,
that
I
will be
John,
historic.
As always.
All right, thank you, Patrick.
And good to hear you so optimistic.
I am pretty optimistic.
Patrick Henry Bass, thank you. Patrick Henry Bass is our takeaway contributor and a senior editor for Essence Magazine. And I actually love conventions. I love the Democratic Convention, the Republican Convention, because you're right, it's scripted, but we have a transparent system. For all our flaws in America, there are certainly many, and we talk about some of those every day, But yet and still, power passes in a very orderly manner, and we get to watch some of it.
Yeah, they're shaking hands behind the scenes, those lobbyists.
That's part of the system, and that's why there are reform movements. Things change, John. But right. It's a good start.
Yeah, whatever.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.